Yeah, we're recording now. I wanted to ask you about the alarm system, John. I know that we established before that there was essentially an east side and a west side of Saginaw.
That is correct. In Saginaw, in my time for years and years, there was two postmasters, one on the east and one on the west, and I think it's about 20 years now that they have just the one postmaster, and that's the same way with the fire department. We consolidated, and the school board is consolidated. We was both two bullheaded to unite. We had the river to separate us, and that was the way they did them.
How many bridges were there, you can say, back in the 20s, early part of the 20s?
Well, there was a Center Street Bridge and the Court Street Bridge. Where the Court Street Bridge is now, there was three bridges. You went across a low-level bridge on Court, and then there was a little bale bridge, and then there was another long bridge near the waterworks where the intake is.
Mm-hmm.
There was three bridges for this present Court Street Bridge. That has been all filled in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Genesee Johnson on Bristol. Bristol was a... And Genesee was a streetcar bridge. The streetcars went over both of those bridges in them days.
Mm-hmm.
And 6th Street.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the stations. There, when you came on, the headquarters was located where the parking ramp is now on Federal Street?
Federal and Baum, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And the city market was in part of that. The city market was right in back. That was a big place. When you'd worked at old headquarters at 5 o'clock in the morning, the day goes and whops, so they'd be in there with their vegetables and that, and you might as well hit the deck.
Oh, it's kind of noisy around.
Kind of noisy, yes.
They hawk.
Yeah, they have live chickens, and they couldn't sell nothing before 6 o'clock.
But I see.
But they were there real early.
Back when you first came on, we talked about the horses, but do you remember the first motorized rig you mentioned earlier about
yes.
19 what, 10?
In 1911. I have a clipping or a postal card that I got from Chief Hudson. He lived next door to me.
Where would that be?
Next door to my home, Chief Hudson. He was a fire chief before Kreutzberger. He was in during the First World War.
I see.
Well, and by the way, you want to go back to Chief Wallace died. It's the only time in the history of the Saginaw that we ever had a general alarm. And that fire was in the 100 block South Jefferson. It was in 1914, in October. And Chief Wallace went to the firebox to send in what we call was a second alarm from a firebox. He suffered a heart attack, and while he was at the box, and as he suffered this attack, he reached over forward and sent in a general alarm, and that's the only time in the record of the city of Saginaw that there was a general alarm, and that was...
Was it a fluke? I mean, did he intend to send in a second? And
He tried to send in a second. He died. The third blow, he didn't know he sent in. He suffered a heart attack and died right at the scene.
I see.
Right on the corner of Genesee and Jefferson, box 22.
How old a man was he?
Well, that would be hard. I knew when I was a kid. I would say he was in his 60s, I wouldn't say him. But the man was quite an athlete. He could run 100 yards in less than 11.
Is that right?
Yes, he was a very good, and he could throw the... them pins.
Hmm?
Them pins, what they call them. Some dummy pins and that.
Oh, yeah, right. That they throw back and forth. You see them in the circle a lot?
Acrobat, he was quite a...
You could juggle them?
You could juggle them, yes, that's right. I know when I was a kid, and he had a little black mare, that was his horse, little Bessie, and he used to, a lot of times, he'd give me a ride down, if I'd be down there to see my dad, he'd give me a ride over to Court, Michigan, and I'd have to walk home. He wouldn't take me no farther, because he knew I'd get lost.
Yeah. How about that first engine, though? That was a Watts?
That was a Webb.
A Webb.
Webb would have been the leading fire manufacturer if the man would only live. This was bought in 1911, and this man Webb, he died, and this pumper was had a dome on the back. That was
the surge?
Yes, that was a surge.
Mm-hmm.
And the man died, and that automobile run ride just like a baby buggy, and it had four speeds head and two reverses. Now I don't know why they needed the two reverses, and it would, but that's man died, and it seems old American LaFrance and Seagrave and them took over. Mm-hmm. But this fellow had to jump on all of them. I don't know what.
How much water volume was an early pump like that?
This was even in 1911. That was a 750.
A 750. That's surprising.
That is right. That is right. Yeah. Then we bought a Seagrave after that for number twos at 15-6, and that was only a 350. And every time it leave the pavement, you'd be stuck with it. You'd have to have wreckers
kind
and
of
stuff.
Low slung.
Low slung, and it had hard tires.
I see.
And this Webb was in higher built and was a really
When did they first come out with the Bloom tire?
Well, Webb had them in 1911, and then they bought an American LaFrance, or they bought a Seagrave for the west side, and that had hard tires, and every time you'd get off the thing, that weighed 8 tons.
Oh, they were heavy. When,
yeah, they were heavy. And so then Wallace was chief when he bought the first two, and then Hudson, he bought this little Seagrave. We call it a little, it was a small pumper, but it was awful heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then in 1920, Kreutzberger became chief, and he ordered 3 American LaFrances, and they all come practically, one of them come in January, the other 2 in February, and they had the other tires on. They were 750 pumpers. I think there were some in there when you came
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And,
they have a trouble supplying a rig like that, 750. I mean, you couldn't probably supply it too well off from the hydrants they had back in those days, could you?
Oh, yes. You'd go do it in relays, and then you would take water out from one main to another. We had a fire at the corner of Warren and Genesee. It was Bresky's Hardware, and that was a major fire.
When would that be?
And that would be possibly 1924,
mm-hmm.
maybe 25. But you would take all these pumpers they had. They had all 750s, and I was trying to rack my brain to find out when the hang we got the first 1,000-gallon pumper. And it seems though it was in 1926, and I think that's was on Harrison Van Buren. But getting back to Bresky fire, we took this old Webb was a reserve pump, and we pumped water out of a hydrant at the post office on Genesee, and we pumped it into a hydrant at Genesee and Jefferson to increase the water in that main to supply,
to supply the other
pumps.
One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now Stevenson, the way he does it, he'll in your time we had Bran Hardens and the different ones. I don't know if it was his idea. Of course, he was one of them Johnny come lately, he was experimenting, but he had taken and take one pump and pump it, a line into another pump to boost it. Well, then you'd have to watch yourself.
You'd have water coming right out of your tank if you didn't watch out.
That's right, and you would liable to hurt your relief valves and that. And if you build up too much pressure near your relief valves, it wouldn't work. And so then he come with the idea of putting a nozzle on the side, and as soon as your pressure was getting more pressure in your pump than you would deliver, and then you'd open up the nozzle. Mm-hmm. So I say I don't know whether
that's good or not.
Good or not. But,
yeah. Were these early rigs, were they carry water? They have a tank on?
The only tank they had was this 350-gallon tank in this Seagrave that they had in South Washington was no pumper. I don't know why they ever bought it. I told you a while ago it was a flying squad.
Yeah.
Well, all they had was 40-gallon chemical.
Uh-huh.
And
we
never had a tank on a piece of fire apparatus till Bender come in there, and that was after 1932. Mm-hmm. And these was all homemade. We had a fellow named O'Brien, who was a real handy man, and he built this here stuff, put these tanks, and he put windshields on. When I was in there, there was never a windshield on it. It was just an open job. It was just like.
Were most of the early rigs, they didn't have cabs either.
No, there was no cabs. There wasn't even a windshield. There was nothing. You just
climb behind the wheel.
Climb behind the wheel, and they were right hand drives.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Don't you remember any of them?
I remember one of them.
Well, that's
they were all that way then.
Yeah, in them days.
Chain driven, weren't they?
Chain driven, and your lever is on this side, on the outside of it. So it made no difference of your shift, and you still shifted the same way, but you all sat on the right-hand side.
And these were piston pumps?
No. The only piston pump was your steam pump. The Seagrave always come out with a centrifugal pump.
Mm-hmm.
And all American and Frances we had up until the time in your time, always had to have a rotary gear pump.
Mm-hmm.
A rotary gear pump is a good pump, but it was a pump you can't depend on your relief valves until 1929. LaFrance came out with one. You remember that one, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that was old 13, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a nice relief valve. Well, now Seagrave makes. Centrifugal pumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. With a centrifugal, it's essentially two pumps in one, where they can go for pressure or for volume.
Yeah, well,
water. Was that how the early ones were, or was that?
The other ones had a separate pump. You'd have to get up on them, and you had a different lever. You'd shove, and you'd be more like a booster pump. You'd bring this, lift this water up into your pump. You know the principle of a centrifugal pump.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Yeah, right.
It's the buckets. And a rotary gear pump is where your gears just go around your water. And a rotary gear pump, you had pressure and you had city.
Right.
Either one. And that's the same as your centrifugal. You have, they don't call it that. I'm just trying to think what the. High and low, I guess. I think the other was pressure and capacity.
Right. Where you could be going for volume on a big fire.
And you go through.
John, we were discussing earlier about the early rigs when they were horse drawn, and essentially I was asking about the pumps, and you told me about there was no pump, but they were essentially just a hose cart.
That's right.
You depended on what hydrant pressure then. You'd get to the scene, or how would you
That was it. Whatever water you'd get out of the hydrant, sometimes water would just dribble out. Your hydrants was far apart. Your pressure wasn't. They couldn't increase the pressure because them days you had a lot of wooden mains. You had some old mains. You could give the a lot of pressure, hang the mains
would
break.
Yeah,
that's true. And they had that trouble. For quite a while after we put in this new waterworks. I call it new. I think it was built in 38, or was it even before that?
That, of course, has the diesel pumps.
Yeah, it has diesel, and like the diesel. No, they use the diesel for reserve. They use the regular electric pumps.
Electric pumps for standard.
Standard, and then I don't know how often it is, but they run the diesels every, whether it's every once a day or twice a day or that, just to see that.
I was surprised when you mentioned that the fire stations were located alongside the river. Tell me about that, and why don't we tell the people here why they were located there?
Well, all your sawmills, lumber mills, when I was a kid, I don't know how many times that the sky would light up and the fire would be down at Blitzvanocken's or Saginaw Man's lumber yard or Malcolm's Cooper Shop. And by the way, when my dad was in there, Malcolm's Cooper Shop, he got injured and broke his hip. And my dad was off quite a while. In them days, there was no insurance. If you was an officer in the department, them days, no compensation. Well, there was no compensation.
No sick leave. No
sick leave.
No,
they were nothing. You didn't get nothing. And that's what you had. You had Cooper shops, barrel factories, butternut dish factories. All that stuff was all along the river, because your logs come down the river, and that's they never had any ways to. It would be a costly way to haul a log back to somewhere else to do it, and that's where your fire risk was all along the river. Mm-hmm. And all the fire stations, you take the one at Meade, Michigan, was just a couple blocks from the river. The one at Harrison, Van Buren, was a few blocks from the river. The one on North Michigan, Thames, was a little bit from the river. The one South Saginaw was a little way from the river. The one I told you a while back that burned down with a big fire was right alongside the river.
Right, that was old number five.
Number five.
1,200 blocks out.
Yeah, that's. And today they tell me, or they have when I was in a department, that a fire station that's sitting on the outskirts can come into town so much quicker than a station downtown to go towards the outskirts.
Mm-hmm. Because they have the traffic problems.
Traffic problems, mm-hmm. that there's. So that's, imagine why they're building out.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk just a little bit about equipment. You know, while I was on, there was a bunch of things that I just never have seen used.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you ever have. One of them was, you know, remember hoses used to have tin roofs on them. We had that tin roof opener.
Yeah,
that was always on the ladder truck.
That was used very, very often in the neighborhood I'm living in right now. I'll bet in a square block that there's over half of the houses with tin roofs.
Is that right?
And we used them a lot, yeah.
You just use that just like a regular can opener?
Just like a can opener. You get to the register and you lift just right up there, and then soon as you get that off it, then usually some of them even put that over another roof. Some of them don't. Some of them put it on right over their roof boards.
Mm-hmm.
That fellow across the way from me, he just took and pounded. Well, that's getting off the subject.
Oh, that's okay. John, one other piece of equipment that I never saw used, maybe you have, was that Boston door opener. You know what I mean? It was built like crowbar.
Not a Boston. It's a Detroit door opener.
Detroit door opener. Okay, yeah. I stand corrected on that.
That's a Detroit opener. They've been used, but we found out a good many years ago that to use that, that the fella might just as well buy a new door. So we've
really
come
wrecks the door.
Wrecks the whole jam and everything else. So we've come to the conclusion that. Or they did, rather, to take an axe and break the glass and reach in and unlock it or unbolt it, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use one of them, you can figure that the fellow would have to
replace the casing.
He'd have to replace the whole place. Mm-hmm. It really makes them go in splinters.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, now that we're talking about, how about that neck? I never saw that used. I understand that it has been. Somebody told me that they used it. At one fire, I don't know which fire it was, where they weren't ready for the party. That's when they said, you always open up that net before you go down to where it was. They had a situation in the alley, and they didn't have it all the way open when the guy jumped.
Yeah, well, in my experience, all the time I was in the department, I never seen the net used. But what you're referring to, it wasn't no fire. There was a guy back in the Weekman building in the alley, and I think you was in the department that time. If you wasn't, it was right around the time you come in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy wanted to commit suicide. And Dalhoff he got hurt there. And they tried to hold the fellow back, talk him out of it. Well, just as soon as he seen the firemen come in there with the net, before they had it completely unfolded, the guy jumped and caught Dalhoff here in the arm someplace. But he wanted to die, and that's what he did.
He did die.
He died of his injury. But actually, they'll tell you that a net over three stories, you might as well not have in that, because you're going to be injured severely or
enough
be killed.
So that it'll die.
Over three stories.
Right.
And most people don't know how to jump in their net anyway. You can't tell them.
Yeah, they try to jump with
their feet first. With their feet and their stiff leg and that, and if they jump with their
flat,
try to have their bottom hit the net. There's a possibility. I've seen it used at the tower. We used it, I think, I can't even remember now if it was a first or second, but it wasn't over that.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had a good-sized crew there. We had every loophole on
it.
Manned. Quick manned, yes.
Right. Let me ask you something. I remember seeing pictures of one of the early ladder trucks. I'm not talking about just the straight ladder trucks. No, I'm talking about the early
aerial
spring
trucks.
Up aerial.
Yeah.
Not the pneumatic, the spring up aerial.
Yeah.
When did they first get that?
They got that the year before I come in. That came in January of 1921. It was American LaFrance.
American.
And you had a tillerman in the back.
I see.
Hit to drive it. The man behind he'd always have to turn. If the guy wanted to turn right, the fellow in the back would have to turn his wheels the other way. It was quite complicated till he got you. He didn't want to drive his car like that, or he'd get into an accident. But
right, you'd have to steer opposite to the man.
Opposite
in
front. And and that was all spring. You had a spring. And
how
that,
far up would it spring?
How far would the ladder extend?
Well, that, and also how far up would it spring? I know it had brakes inside.
It would spring possibly on a 45. Well, just as soon as it quit springing, then you got these cranks to bring it up, your wheels to bring it up straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as you got it up straight, then you had your other wheels for to extend your extension.
Mm-hmm.
But then was 85.
Oh, they would go that high?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They have to set jacks on those?
Yes, yeah, you had jacks, same as, and they were wooden ladder.
What, they were wood?
Yeah.
They were made out of what?
Well, I know these pompiers, they was a number of the pompier ladders on the side, and I've never seen them used at a fire. They were just used for, I couldn't tell you what kind of wood, but it's a very, very, best grade wood you can buy, and I think when I was in there, them pompier, what would they be, about 12 foot?
Yeah, well,
15 at the most.
At the most.
Well, they cost $90 them days, so I imagine they'd be about $300 today to buy
just
a skeleton of a.
Yeah, just so that people will understand what a pompier ladder is.
Yeah,
it's a single ridged with rungs coming out of each side.
Yeah.
Would you say that would be a description?
Yes.
And a large hook on the top?
Yeah, a gooseneck to fit in to a windowsill.
Right. You'd use them in pairs.
Yes, and what they was, the man invented them, what they was intended for, was these here buildings in these bigger cities after an 85-foot ladder was as tall an aerial as they had for years. And then they came out with 100 and I think there's a foreign country, I don't know if it's Germany or England, I think they have 125.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of the Pompier was that if you'd get have a rescue work above your 85, that you'd carry one of them or have pulled up with a rope, and then you could hook it into a story or two above you to, for rescue work.
Right.
That's what they're intended for, but Saginaw Fire Department never used them for that. They used them just to see if you was, to train, see how much nerve you had, if you could take it or not. Yeah, they were shaky.
You remember...
you know, you're talking about Pompier ladders. Is they only had one when they built this drill tower back at headquarters. Mm-hmm. When was that there when you came in, or was it on Bristol?
No.
Well, it was a fellow named Kreutzberger and I, and we were young, full of the dickens, and so we said, let's try it. We only had the one because they ordered some. And we'd go up there. We went up the whole top, what is it, 9 stories?
Mm-hmm. It's a long way up.
And we come down that way, and my gosh, it wasn't a couple weeks after they got the other ones, and someone picked us here one up, and they just dropped it. And it broke right
to half.
And here us, and we wasn't supposed to do it. We wasn't told, just...
And you would have died up
falling off.
You remember, of course, Billy Gordon?
Very well, Billy Gordon. I went to school together.
Did anybody ever buy any of those patented roof ladder hooks that...
Yeah,
wasn't he that invented?
Yeah, him and George Straw. He didn't invent, he got credit for inventing. He was smarter. A fellow named Red Miller, he worked on our shift. He came up with the idea, and Gordon Straw heard him, and so
they got together and
made a few. They didn't sell any more than Clem did with these axes.
It was just kind of a gimmick.
At the time. But
you first came on the early fires. Is there any big major fire that stands out in your mind at all?
Well, I think the Hamelin Square. Did I mention Hamelin Square on this last interview?
No, you did earlier, but it was on the part that was erased.
Well, this happened in March, the 9th of March, and I'm just trying now to think, get the year 29.
Mm-hmm.
1929. I was off that night, and it was around 12:30. He was talking about Billy Gordon here in the grill. Billy Gordon was driving the ladder truck on one shift, and I was the other. I worked opposite Bill for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a still, what we called, was the operator. There's a little smoke odor in Jimmy Thomas's restaurant.
Minor fire.
Yeah, so they sent Engine 8 and the ladder crew down there, and they got down there, and they went in the restaurant, and they could smell the smoke, and then all of a sudden it just started looming up, and there was two nurses and someone else, some other lady, and before they sent in their five, Gordon and them guys had put their ladders up and got these down. Well, before they got through with it, there was no firewalls or anything. And the corner was a 3 or 4 story building, and then it dropped down all 2 stories. Mm-hmm. Moose Temple, Hickey's Auto Sales, and all Resigies.
Connected buildings?
They were all connected. There was no firewalls,
and
that basement was all wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out to be a second alarm. And that pumper that Yates had, it was bought in 1926. Pumped down there, and he had to take a hose and keep spraying the engine so it wouldn't get burnt. And they pumped 16 hours.